Hi, welcome to Mission Success, Women in Multifamily, the monthly podcast series dedicated to powerful female leaders in the multifamily industry. I'm Laura Kaluger, senior editor with Multihousing News. This month's guest is a fourth generation real estate professional who has been in the industry for more than 35 years. Stephanie Wiggins is managing director and head of production for PGIM Real Estate's agency lending platform. She leads loan originations for Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, affordable and FHA multifamily loans. So our conversation is going to focus on how affordable housing developers are getting creative with financing in this tight market and how the pressure of high interest rates and expenses is impacting deals. Hi, Stephanie. Welcome to Mission Success.
Hi, nice to be here with you, Laura.
First of all, just tell us a bit about how busy you've been this year. How would you describe your activity in 2023? What PGIM programs saw the highest demand this year?
You know, despite volumes with regard to transactions being significantly down this year, for a variety of reasons, we've been busier than ever. Our clients, our borrowers, depend on us to keep them abreast of the market, right? And to make sure that we're providing them with, timely information, and keeping them abreast of all of the agency programs, Fannie, Freddie, HUD. And we've been screening a ton of business for them. Unfortunately, there are factors that have, impacted what goes from the screening room, quite frankly, to the closing table. And so between inflation, epic rise in interest rates, coupled with declining valuations, looming regulatory changes, and the great divide between buyers and sellers resulting in acquisition activity, which really does drive Fannie, Freddie, and HUD business, that activity is down by 75 to 80%. And so we haven't seen many discretionary refis this year, borrowers are saying, hey, if I have no compelling reason to transact, I'm not going to. And so most of the demand that we've seen this year has either been an opportunistic play, by one of our borrowers, or it's been a borrower whose interest rate cap has expired and they have run out of options and they need to sell. Or restructure and write a very large check, or they have a investment, fund that's coming to a close, And the investors are saying, okay, where are the returns? Or there's a maturity event that is not at all flexible. And so most of what we've seen are sort of, must do transactions.
Right. And 2023 has seen this unfavorable cocktail that you mentioned with high interest rates, high inflation, and all those factors that are making it very hard to transact. How have all these pressures impacted agency lending, particularly in terms of volume? You mentioned that the volumes dropped significantly.
Yeah, absolutely. So, just to level set for a second, this year's volumes are down across the board, as I mentioned. And so just to illustrate, Fannie and Freddie are sort of at their last report combined. They're at about $75 billion of production, and that's against their combined total volume cap of $150 billion. Now, each are projecting to get to $55 to $60 billion by year end. But clearly, that's a significant drop or decrease in expected volume against volume cap. And then FHA or HUD production, over the past 3 years, if you look year over year, they're down 51%, with many of the lenders, So if I'm taking anecdotal information, you know, from some of my lender friends out there, as well as looking at PGIM's own HUD pipeline. You know, pipeline fallout, because HUD business is so sensitive to interest rate volatility, the fallout has been between 75 and 90%. Like, just take that in for a second. That is
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yes. Have you seen anything similar? I don't know, in previous cycles, in previous year, you've been in with the industry for so long. Have you seen anything like this before?
So this is probably my fourth downturn, right? Having come into the business in 1988 as a crisis was looming, right? And I will say, yes, we've had bad times before, but I can't recall a time where there was just this absolute dearth, right? Lack of transactions, right?
Yeah.
Like absolutely nothing happening. And I would say that this kind of pipeline fallout, especially if you look at the FHA numbers, is unprecedented. Right now, I will say that, you know, with the rally in treasuries, right, over the past week, there has been a flurry of activity across the board, Fannie, right, Freddie, and FHA transactions to get to rate lock. But quite frankly, we don't have enough daylight left in the year to make up for the loss in volume that we've already experienced.
Maybe next year.
Hope springs eternal. I mean, we're all, people are being cautiously optimistic about next year. I feel that this sort of divide between buyers and sellers will mitigate, right? Mm-hmm. And people will become much more realistic about valuations. I also feel that borrowers, especially people that are, or groups, organizations that are veterans and have been around for a long time and remember a time when capital wasn't free, will come around, right? And they'll change their mindset and adjust their expectations about interest rates. And so if all of those things come together, 2024 should be better.
We'll see. Let's go back a bit to the end of 2022, when there was this momentum that helped many shovel-ready affordable development deals receive additional resources from state and local agencies. Is that momentum gone, or do you feel like affordable housing deals are still a priority?
Being in the agency space, right, and the agencies and HUD are keenly focused on safe, decent, and affordable housing, right?
Right,
across the spectrum of affordability, whether it's naturally occurring affordability or deeply, right, and regulated affordable housing, this continues to be a top priority. And so, you know, it's driven by the tremendous demand in this country. You know, right now, more than half of renters are cost burdened, which means they're paying more than 30% of their income towards housing. And, you know, the continued spotlight, right, and heightened awareness on the widening wealth gap, and the fact that tent cities, right, are really becoming a part of the skyline of every major city in this nation. You know, this crisis has gone beyond just the agencies or the administration, right, thinking about it. We now have your average everyday voter, right, who's like walking through their downtowns and they're saying, no, this is not right, you know. And so they are demanding that their state and local officials come up with ways to address affordability in their backyards. And so from tax abatements to density bonuses to low-cost loans to bond issuances, all of these are tools that are being, you know, provided by municipalities, and it's being driven by this heightened awareness.
And do they work? Are really developers, are they really using these tools?
They're absolutely using the tools. Now, could they use more tools? Absolutely. And there are some of the best and brightest minds that are thinking, right, about how to improve, right, the capital stack structure for affordable business. This is like all they think about. And then when you have the agencies, right, Fannie and Freddie, especially PER, right, the regulator, FHFA, you know, keenly focused also on driving mission business, it's a perfect storm in a good way, I think, that we're addressing, you know, demand. You may have heard this week, the new volume caps were announced for Fannie and Freddie. You know, a marginal decrease from 2023. We're now at $70 billion for each agency, as opposed to $75 billion from in 2023. And the new cap follows suit with previous guidance of providing additional benefits for affordable and workforce housing. And so, you know, they've continued, right, with the trend of 50% of the agency's business must be mission-driven affordable housing, with all loans that support workforce housing this year exempt from the 2024 volume cap. So even more support is being given to the spectrum of affordability. So absolutely still a priority.
And what creative ways are there to structure a loan today?
So to promote affordability, especially in that, you know, workforce housing space, each of the agencies have rolled out affordability programs with restrictions that are governed by the loan agreement. And they're offering improved pricing when sponsors are agreeing to restrict rents, mandating income limits per these programs. So Freddie has its workforce housing preservation program, Fannie has its sponsor dedicated workforce tool. And both of these, again, provide borrowers with lower interest rates and streamlined underwriting if they're agreeing to keep a minimum of 20% of units affordable at 80% of AMI. And so it's just ideal for borrowers who are looking for some benefit, right? But that also want to provide a private sector approach to help solving the affordable housing crisis through these volunteer programs.
And one very important aspect is the Fed's next move. What do we expect it to be? What would that mean for affordable housing investors and developers?
So that is a great question. It's also a tricky question, right? And so not having a crystal ball and just listening, right, to...
Yeah, the voices that you talk to all day, the
right.
People.
So
yeah.
The mandate, and really it's not a mandate, but the chatter really is higher for longer, right?
Okay.
And there is some speculation that, you know, the next move will be a pause again.
Another
right?
pause, yeah.
Another pause, second one. And I think what that means for the development community at large, whether you're affordable housing or market rate, is just providing us with a little bit of stability, right? And it's the volatility that has caused the pause in transactions and people hesitant to move forward.
People need more predictability.
Absolutely. Right. And so I think Fed guidance, if it continues to provide us with some level of, we can count on them being sort of steadied, right? Whatever it is, right? Just no sudden moves, I think we'll get back to, you know, just a normal level of stability.
Looking ahead, what does the multifamily lending market need to start the new year strong?
Again, stability.
Again. Okay.
Right.
That's the most important thing. It keeps coming up.
it really does. And I just remember last year at the conferences that kick off, you know, our origination year, everyone was optimistic, right? They were thinking that, wow, by spring, we'll definitely be able to get transactions moving again. And what paused everything, again, were these steep and unprecedented interest rate movements. And so if we have stability and certainty, we will be well on our way to getting back to normal. Now it's going to be a new normal, right? But any normal right now, Laura, is going to be fantastic.
You're very optimistic.
I'm trying to be, because I really believe that although this slowdown, downturn, this moment is just that, it's a moment. And we will get through this. And, you know, we're all poised and ready to serve our clients well, right, in 2024 and beyond. And so that means that we're going to be vigilant in creating, you know, opportunities and structuring deals for them in a way that serves them best and the residents that live in these homes that they're building or refiing or acquiring or whatever it is, preserving, whatever it is they're doing, you know, we want to be there to serve them well. And so we're ready.
Now let's pivot a bit and focus on a different aspect of your job. What's it like for you to work in multifamily originations? Of all the careers available in multifamily finance, very few women choose loan origination. Why is that? Why do you think most women prefer other paths in multifamily?
So there's an adage, if you can see it, you can be it. And so I really believe that if you have not been exposed to women who are surviving and thriving in, right, in originations, then there is a hesitancy to take that leap of faith. I've had a very unusual path, quite frankly. I'm fourth generation commercial real estate, right? Which is very odd, right? For an African American, right? Right? Much less a woman. I was very clear that I wanted to follow in my family's footsteps, and particularly in my father's footsteps. And my path was forged in such a way that the people that were leaders really took me under their wing. And these were people that, for example, one of my very first jobs, I worked for two female investment sales professionals who worked in DC late 80s, early 90s, selling and transacting for their clients at the time, you know, large office sales and other property types. And so those were, besides my father, two of my very first role models. So I saw very early on that, like, this is possible. And throughout my career, if you chart my path, you'll see I was in places that were always very intentional around diversity, which is improving in our business. But I mean, we're talking late 80s, 90s, early 2000s, right? Before the spotlight on the importance of diversity and inclusion was shining bright, quite frankly.
Yeah, definitely. So having those mentors, those female role models, was quite important, and it had a huge impact on your career, right?
Absolutely. As well as the people of color that I've worked for, right? And and my dad, like all of these amazing role models and mentors taught me that, number one, I absolutely have a seat at the table, right? And that I should never shy away from that. And that this business, it's fun, it's dynamic. And if you are passionate about anything, you will be successful there. And no one can tell you that you don't belong.
It's fun, it's dynamic, but it's also very competitive.
Yes.
Right? How have you differentiated yourself in this field? What would you say is the secret of your success and that this long-term career that you're having in the industry?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say the primary secret to my success is always listen, always ask questions, and always be on a path of learning, right? And so I've been in the business for 35 years, and I literally learn something new every day, and I'm open to it.
Mm-hmm. What needs to be done to continue to diversify the ranks of CRE originators?
Just keeping the topic.
The conversation alive, right?
Yeah, keeping the topic like alive and making sure that our talent pipelines are diverse. Like there is no question that diversity of thought, right? In a room where you're trying to solve complicated problems and you're trying to overcome challenges for your clients. Like if everyone in the room is the same and has had the same experiences, how do you innovate? How do you come up with creative solutions for your clients? You can't. And so diversity as just a value proposition is, if you don't have it, then you're going to be stuck and you're not going to grow your business. You're not going to serve your clients well. And, you know, I'm seeing just tremendous change and growth around this issue in our industry. And it's wonderful to have come from a place, right, where even though I had amazing role models, there have been times in my career where I've been the only one in the room, and that is not the case now. And we just need to keep the momentum going.
So my final question is related to that. And I always ask this question during these podcasts. Would you say the multifamily industry is going in the right direction when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion?
Absolutely. And it's being driven by our industry groups, ULI, NMHC, Mortgage Bankers, NHNRA, you know, AHF Live, like all of these groups, right, are pushing this agenda, which is fantastic. It's being driven by the top organizations, right, across our industry. So if you're a lender, if you're an owner operator, if you're a third party provider, everyone has diversity, equity, and inclusion top of mind. And I don't see that changing. I think it is now a part of the fabric of our industry.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. I really enjoyed this.
Oh, it has been my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you all for listening. Make sure you check out multihousingnews.com regularly for the latest news, feature stories, and podcasts. And don't forget that you can also share your own voice with our audience. The MHN Executive Council is a platform dedicated to multifamily leaders who want to stay in touch with each other and discuss trends and issues affecting the industry. All these valuable insights are regularly posted on our website. So if you're interested in having your voice heard, please get in touch with Editor-in-Chief Jessica Fuhr at jessica.fuhr@cpe-mhn.com. Till next month.